Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 16. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running the design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California near San Diego.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative, just outside of New York City in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, welcome to fall. It's time for the leaves to change and things to get colder, and I'm in Southern California, so none of that actually counts or is anything we see but on postcards. But welcome to it. I would like to say that things are busy. Fall time is when you're supposed to get ready to relax for the holidays, and it just doesn't seem to ever work out that way for business in our cycle anyways. I've been kind of on nonstop shows where we coordinate all the show site presentations and traveling virtually nonstop for, it's almost my fifth week now. I've got a few more to go before I get to finally relax. Actually, the presentation summit will be kind of like almost a benchmark. So only a few more things after that, and then I get to call it the holidays. I will say, a few weeks ago, I was in San Francisco, and I probably had the worst hotel stay I've ever experienced in the many, many years of staying at hotels. And I'll leave it at that, but I just got to grumble a little because
you don't want to shame the hotel chain.
I heard Dreamforce hotels were awful this year.
It was Dreamforce, and I was on the other side of town, so it was, you know, 20 minutes in a taxi or an Uber. But the hotel itself, it was just noisy. I literally was beyond, could not sleep. 4 hours was like a great night's sleep because things were happening at every hour.
I'm not defending the hotel, but this is the conference of like 150,000 people pour into the city. So there are 150,000 hotel rooms.
You know what? The hotel, the city could be empty and this hotel would still be bad. It's just a noisy part of town. And the room I ended up with, which was the upgraded room, I kind of am fearful of what the other one was. I you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, trash trucks. And I don't know. There was just beyond noise, and I sleep pretty soundly. This was, anyways, but the design team, if they are not traveling, and they've already heard me complain about the hotel, so they're happy when they're not traveling, but tons of projects going on, a lot of super fun, super complex projects, a lot of design tasks, you know, I'm managing a lot of approvals and technical requests. So I've got complaints and I've got goods, and it's fall time. So how about you guys?
I got tons of project work right now. It's just pouring in. I'm in the middle of two very large template projects, which I seem to be doing more and more of. But I did an interesting project a couple weeks ago. It was, or maybe a month ago at this point. It was a template project for a very large pharma company, that took me about half an hour to do, but I ended up charging what it worked out to be was about $2,000 an hour. So it just went live this morning. So it'll definitely be out by the time we air this. I wrote an article for presentationguru.com, sort of about this experience and how I got away with charging $2,000 an hour for this.
That's great.
So it is believe me, I was not gouging this client. They called in a panic, but. Anyway, it's an interesting article, which maybe we can talk more about.
You saved them, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was basically a supply and demand thing when it comes to presentation design, the kind of thing we've talked about before, and I'm sure we'll talk about more. But that's on presentationguru.com. If you don't know it, it's a great newish website that has a lot of articles on presentation design and speech coaching and all that kind of stuff.
I can't wait to read it.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm from Green Bay. Well, actually, I'm from Minneapolis. I live in Green Bay, and I'm actually recording this podcast from Minneapolis. My very fabulous client, SPS Commerce, has given me a nice little conference room, and they're allowing me to do this before I hop on the plane back to Green Bay.
Nice. That is very nice. That's thank you.
Yeah.
All right, news. Not a whole lot, but the Mac did get an update. You can now, at long last, trim video on the Mac from within PowerPoint.
Oh, really?
You can, set up trigger points, which is less important. But yeah, for the longest time, you couldn't do any, you couldn't trim video, basically, which is was a major nicety of PowerPoint on PC. So now you can.
Oh, that's actually great news. I don't know about it. I'm going to go experiment with it, because when you do trim a video on the Windows side, it causes some editing problems on the Mac side.
Right, right.
The same thing with triggers. I don't use triggers a ton, but with the Mac not being able to edit them, it also didn't respect them. So if you set a trigger point to pause at a certain part, it wouldn't work on the Mac. So this is big.
It's very
thanks for the news.
For that reason, I wouldn't do it. Just like Troy described, I wouldn't add trim.
And of course, as always, I cannot honestly tell you if it is for everybody, for the fast insider, for the. Which is, I think, becoming a bit of an issue, because Microsoft is not clear with who gets what when, and there's sort of no documentation on it.
Okay.
But I'm on Fast Insider, so that is it's at least there. It might be for everybody. I haven't checked with my other computer that I'm not on Fast Insider, so I guess I should have done that.
So today's topic, pitch decks, which are specialized sales presentations, and they're really our discussion topics. It's going to be fun. Kind of a who uses them, who designs them, what is unique about their content, and how each of us approaches a pitch deck conversation. No, how each of us approaches a pitch deck project. okay, let's start off.
Don't edit that out.
Who uses pitch decks? Let's just start there.
All right. So I think this topic is going to be kind of a continuation of our agency work episode, which is very popular, right? That had the most downloads, didn't it?
It did.
So, you know, while a lot of companies create sales presentations or have to pitch for work, I think pitch decks are just a huge part of agency work because they're always pitching. They're always pitching for the next work against the next agency. And certainly that's been the case for me. I mentioned before when I worked at Edelman, I created or oversaw almost 500 new business decks. So we were living and breathing those day in, day out. It was huge for about 800, 700 person office. I can't even remember. So yeah, that's pretty much all we were doing.
That's a lot. I create pitch decks. In the financial industries, a pitch deck means something completely different. It's a hard copy piece that people use to sit with their prospective investors to go through. It's not a projected presentation. Of course, there's always the sales capabilities presentation, and Nolan, as you just mentioned, the agency pitch deck.
Another one is, and this is where we kind of focus on more the pitch decks, is a lot of production companies putting on the larger meetings are another user of pitch decks. So I see a really close association with sales decks, which are really not the focus today, but many of the same characteristics are there. And this is kind of a confusing topic, but so a lot of sales teams are going to look at a pitch deck almost as a sales presentation, and a lot of production companies that are pitching for their next big project may look at, they actually call it a sales presentation, but really it's a pitch deck in the way we're talking about it here. So I think there are a lot of industries and a lot of people that do use specialty pitch decks.
Yeah,
and
I mean beyond what we've just talked about, you've got governments, you've got construction companies, basically like anybody bidding on a job is use a pitch deck pretty much these days.
Exactly. And I mentioned the financial services companies. That's exactly right.
Okay, and I got an even narrower, tinier niche of pitch decks, because a pitch deck is, you know, it's really a one-time presentation. It's not one you're going to reuse over and over and over. And we've done several of these. They're kind of fun, but a resume presentation can also be a pitch. You're pitching for it, but there's a lot of the same characteristics. An internal department seeking funding, which actually now that I'm saying it, that was actually a government. Client. So yeah, Nolan, that would fall right into the government things.
Yeah, I mean, certainly internal. I mean, we've certainly done internal pitches to the CEO, to you know, president, to try to get funding or approval for something.
Yeah.
So have you like, when you say resume presentations, you mean an individual wants to turn his resume into a presentation? Right?
Yes. Now, not, hey, I just graduated from design school or business school and here's all about me type of resume. But no, the ones I'm thinking of specifically, they approached it like an investor meeting, you know, a venture capital meeting, and they were very high level C-suite individuals going up to head up departments, you know, whole divisions at a company, and they really wanted to put together more of a case study and pitch, you know, their background, their capabilities, and their vision for that. But it was put together just like a pitch. You know, here's a, you know, here's the pitch I'm going to do live. Here's the leave behind version. And here's the follow-up additional resources you can get a hold of. It was very cool. So yeah, it's just another area where it falls into place, I think.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I've done that, but I didn't think of it as a pitch deck, but you're absolutely right.
Wow. I've never done it.
And we're calling these pitch decks. I have a client who calls it the first call deck.
Oh.
Now that might be like a capabilities or a sales presentation, but it's
it's like first sales call?
Yes,
like knocking on the door?
Exactly, first call. Well,
maybe must be a Midwestern thing.
No, actually, I was in San Jose coaching the executives last week.
That's a Silicon Valley.
Yeah. So which of us works with agency clients or any client to develop pitch decks?
I have a couple small agencies I work with occasionally. Like 1 to 5 people, but I haven't worked with any of the large agencies for years for project work. I have for training, but it's, as we'll talk about, it's just too stressful.
It's been months for me.
Months.
No, and then I feel bad. Well, the last agency pitch, they did not get the pitch. So then I start to feel responsible.
Oh, come on. You
not no. It's just, you know, we're all conscientious.
That's what's so frustrating. You know, when I, having done sort of like 500 in a row, what was so aggravating was you could do the absolute best job yourself and, you know, the best design or whatever, but if their budget is off, it doesn't matter. I mean, it all comes to, I did this major pitch years ago for, this was probably the largest thing I ever did in terms of money. It was about $150 million pitch. Johnson & Johnson was looking to, they had agencies come in. They wanted to consolidate a lot of their certain type of business. So they wanted a holding company basically to pitch for all sorts of, you know, a package deal. And so I came in with Omnicom, which I was working for at the time, and we had like 4 or 5 agencies jointly pitching. But, you know, so we put together this amazing presentation. We did it in Keynote. I actually ran it. And we heard later that we hands down had the best presentation, best looking, clearest, most effective, blah, blah, blah. And we lost. And the reason we lost was came down to one slide, which was the budget slide.
Ah.
So, you know, it's out of your control. We just came in far too expensive.
There's lots of things outside of our design world that can influence it.
You're right.
So, and I know in our agency episode, I specifically said TLC does not do a lot of agency work. And in specific to agency pitch decks, we do work for agencies for their end clients. But we do have a steady stream of pitch deck projects, but they're more on the production company side. They're more on kind of those internal funding requests. So I haven't really tied into the agency world for the pitch decks, but we do definitely tie into a couple of other industries with them. And with those, it's kind of, we usually get an after report like, okay, here we found out, we being the company that was doing the pitching, who the other vendors were pitching and here's who got the work, because it becomes pretty obvious, you know, it's going to be known that somebody's going to do this work. And we usually get to hear a little bit of why it didn't work. So I try not to take it personal. I really do, because we get very vested in the content and the people. But yeah, it's a little bit of a, so we do a lot of pitch decks. They're just not in the same sense. So that's why it's a great conversation. And we get dejected. I do just the same way when they don't go your way, even though we probably wouldn't be working on the project in the end.
Right.
We're just kind of disappointed that it didn't work out for, you know, our portion.
So like, what kind of format are they taking? How are you guys making these pitch decks? Like what software, what's it look like?
Okay. I use PowerPoint, and that's usually why an agency will come to me, because their client will want the presentation in PowerPoint. The agency isn't comfortable with it. Plus, there are the leave behinds, and I've, of course, customized formatted notes area for the leave behind, that type of thing. So it's all done in PowerPoint.
So I will throw a little tidbit out there. Nolan was the very first person that actually opened my eyes that you could do some really cool stuff with the notes view printouts of PowerPoint slides. Because I did some cool stuff. And then Nolan made this one-off little comment. I think it was at an earlier presentation, but I was like, that is brilliant thinking. So there you go, brilliant. Hey, I see pitch decks kind of in two phases. So I always kind of, it's one project, but we always look at it as two phases because there's usually a print or PDF version. Mm-hmm. And we're going to design that a little bit differently than we're going to do the second one, which is the actual meeting in-person projected presentation. So again, I think we get the call because we do a lot of focus on PowerPoint and presentation design with a strong background in print design. But I really see most pitch decks as a two-phase project. And you kind of got to approach them a little bit differently because they're two different mediums being used.
Yeah, I mean, I do. We've done mostly PowerPoint, but we've certainly done Keynote. We've done Prezi. We're always trying to experiment. We once put a half dozen iPads on the table and had people scroll through the deck on that. And this was in the early days of the iPad, so maybe Keynote was on there. I'm not even sure, but I know we had to jump through a lot of hoops to get it to work. We did a lot of printing, professional printing, whether it was designed in PowerPoint or not. One time, I think we spent close to like $50,000 to custom bind literally like 20 decks for a major electronics company pitch.
I missed that part. I loved that part of working at an agency. The pitch books would be pretty cool looking.
Because I've been out of it for a while, I wonder how much is physical anymore these days.
Right.
Obviously everything is moving digital, but really, I mean, I can imagine a lot of clients just saying, please don't give us any paper. I mean, we even got that 5 years ago.
80%, at least, the vast majority have a print component to them.
Oh, okay.
Some of them have a one sheet leave behind. Many of them have a pre-read, which is all the content way in detail. And then they all have a presentation part, assuming they get the call into, show us what you can do and let's meet your team. Then there's an actual presentation. But usually the presentation is not the first design focus in a pitch deck for us anyways. So, the vast majority do a lot of printing that we see.
So if you are printing, what kind of page size are you talking about? We used to do a lot of those 11x17 tabloid size to stand out, to make it look weightier and, just kind of more formal, I guess.
It's impressive. I like that 11x17 size. And of course, I've done the 16x9.
I think that most of ours are just letter size, kind of based on 16x9. I've done some larger ones. It's more those leave behind one sheets where you do the 11x17, either as a giant, I don't want to say giant, but the larger poster size, or maybe it's a fold over. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a little four pager. And then we've also done some, we still do some that are 4x3, which is kind of the aspect ratio that works better on iPads. So a number of pitches are still, I know you said you just did one that was all iPad based. We do a number of them that are geared towards viewing on iPads. So we work in the 4x3 for that. So we work at the print size to match that just because then it gets easier.
Yeah.
But not the big size for us as much. So maybe that's a little bit of a change.
Hmm.
So staying with the PDF thing, though, is animations or transitions even a consideration when you're designing?
No, not if it's static. But if I include hyperlinks to outside resources or interactivity for navigation, of course, then that's animation in our world.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, if it's static, it's not a consideration. It's all about the print layout and the managing the file size. But the hyperlink thing is a really interesting aspect because it's not really a transition or animation, but it is an interaction.
Right.
And you got to plan for it.
Let's warn people again that you cannot, the hyperlinks don't carry over when you make a PDF on the Mac. I had yet another client asked me the other day. She said, my hyperlinks all went away, and I had to explain again.
But if I create it on a PC, will those hyperlinks?
Oh yeah, yeah. Once it's a PDF, it's a PDF. But
okay,
they just won't export from PowerPoint.
Okay,
don't worry about that one as much. Although I really should, because the last one we did was oh no, that was all Keynote based. Sorry, we were on the Macs, but it was a different program, whole different scenario. Okay, so picking up on Sandy's hyperlink comment, because I think that's really cool. I now think there are three formats to a pitch deck, because okay. I said two earlier, because there's the slideshow version, the print version, and there's also a digital version.
Yes.
And I would categorize PDF as a digital format or any other computer format. Anything else you guys do along there?
Sure. Are you getting a lot of clients saying they want an iPad compatible and people are viewing it on an iPad?
That's kind of dwindling. We now get the tablet or web friendly, but iPad specific was a big thing and it still comes up, but not nearly as much as say 2 years ago. Are you seeing it at all?
Not much, but I always wonder because I always tell people like when you're creating a presentation, you have no control or you have little control of how the end user is going to see it. They might print it out and look at it on the airplane. They might look at it on their tablet. They might look at it on their computer. They might have internet access or they might not. I actually don't very often make things specifically for the iPad.
Right. Same here. But so that makes me think about if we're looking at the different formats in which it's going to be viewed, what about font sizes on the, I guess, print PDF pitch decks?
Wow. If it's print, you know, I mean, we're talking 10 to 11 point, 10 and a half, depending on the font, because that's what print is.
Exactly. Okay. So I'll
definitely the smaller sizes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, again, if you are writing it for print too, that's the other thing. You should be writing more in prose, in paragraphs, because that's what a print document is.
Right.
Doesn't matter that you're using PowerPoint. Get rid of those bullets and those headers. Just it's a report.
It's
a report, and that goes right back to the hey, there's two phases. There's that print phase, which is going to usually have a lot more content on each page, so it's smaller. Trying to keep the professional typesetting layouts, and we're not trying to make it look too busy. And then when you go to the presentation portion, the presenter should be carrying a lot of that content. You know, it shouldn't all be on the screen because people have seen it or they're going to get it. So, yes, font size smaller for print.
So how many slides are you generally seeing in pitch decks these days? Increasing or decreasing?
I'm going to go with for the print version because, again, it's more content, and usually the print version is going to include a full printout of the budget thing. You know, all the spreadsheets are printed out as opposed to just kind of sound bites pulled out into a presentation. So I'm going to go with 70 plus in the print version, and maybe
didn't you mention you're working with government pitches?
A couple of them are government. Those were the internal.
Those would be big.
Those were the internal request ones, and it was almost all numbers. It would fit right into the financial presentation. I think typical prints, like a production company going to pitch for a project, you know, it's 70 plus on the print and, you know, it's less 30 to 70 on the presentation portion, because we're going to take a lot of that content out and simplify it down and make it so the presenter carries that information flow. What about you?
25 to 50. I don't know when it comes to it, but you know, when it comes to investor decks, I'm firm believer that it can and should be done in no more than 10 slides.
I want you to show me how to do that because there's usually so much stuff in
there. I have it somewhere, and let me see if I can pull it up. And I think I got this from a web post, and I might have that post as well, but I actually have a list of the 10 slides and what should be on it, and I send it to clients occasionally.
He has it in his blog, but I don't know. I still find that I have to break it up into multiple slides.
Investor and venture capital are two different things.
Good point.
Capital is I got to capture your attention in a very short amount of time, and I will give you all the details in investor deck later. And the financial ones, Sandy, like you're talking about, the printout financial ones, you know, that's kind of an investor thing where it's just amazing amounts of data put in place because everything's got to be. How about you, Sandy? What do you see as a pitch deck? If we were to say, hey, Sandy, I need a pitch deck, how many slides should I expect? What would you say based on your experience?
You know what? I would say anywhere from 20 to 50. It really depends. It's a big range.
I got to cut my stuff down. We're just providing too much.
No, it's because you charge by the slide. So, right. No, none of us charges by the slide, right?
No. Let's clarify.
We should clarify. Everything is done on a project. Okay, what do you find?
I just found it. The standard pitch deck. Slide one, cover page. logo, blah, 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 contact, blah, blah. Number two, the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Number three is the team. So again, this is a like a startup research deck. Number four is the product, what you got. And yes, you can do that in one slide because it should be that simple enough to understand. Number five is market size. Mm-hmm. Number six is your business model. Number seven is your competition. Number eight, go-to-market strategy. Nine.
That's where it gets long.
Well, okay. Number nine, traction, your present revenue and your proposed revenue. That's the financials looking mm-hmm. forward. And number 10 is the ask from the investors.
Yep.
That's it.
You know, and that seems all doable except that go-to-market strategy.
And that becomes the 50 slides.
I know, exactly. Okay.
The competition one, a lot of times people don't do that. They basically say why they're superior or have more insight than the competition, but they don't call out what the competition's going to attempt to do.
I think you have to. I mean, and I think that's being honest because that is what the investor will immediately say. Oh, well, don't we already have Airbnb? How is this different? Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. No, that's a great list.
I forget where I got that from. I don't.
Hard to say that. It sounds like a Guy Kawasaki thing.
I think it's his blog. It's good stuff.
All right. Any other design considerations as we're sort of talking about pitch decks?
Well, I mean, it seems kind of simple, but is it going to be designed with the agency brand in mind or the client's brand in mind?
Oh, that is a huge mm-hmm. philosophical thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. So I had to deal with this all the time because it's sort of the first question. Do you want it to look like who you're pitching or do you want it to look like you? Mm-hmm. I would prefer it to look like the pitcher. And in fact, at my last agency, I had this fantasy when I first got there that I would be able to institute this look and feel that all our pitches looked the same. To kind of build the brand. I mean, sure. It's a pretty big brand, but I always wanted it to be whenever you got an Edelman presentation on your desk, you knew it immediately. It looked the same. It was sort of constructed the same, and that was never going to fly, I realized. Huh. But I, you know, in the way that if you see a McKinsey proposal, like, oh, yeah, that's a McKinsey proposal. I'm paying good dollars for that. Like, I want it to be, oh, that's a certain agency proposal.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that one, just in the aspect of, so I know this isn't specific. Well, I guess it's specific to the topic because it's about how do you brand your pitch. I feel an agency needs to be the chameleon and take the client's branding and amplify it. But if it's a company doing their presentations, so not pitch decks, but their presentations, they need to be identifiable as that company's branding. There needs to be a visual identity to that company.
Well, there's
pitch decks need to kind of, they need to be professional and they need to have style, but it needs to kind of mold to the company, not the agency that prepared it.
The argument I usually get is we need to show that we understand the client. And I think a lot of times they're like, oh, well, if we use their color palette and we steal everything from their website, we will show that we understand the client. And I'm like, no, because you're just following a brand guideline. But I think... certainly if you are pitching a program and you're pitching creative, then yes, of course, you need to show what this client's new marketing campaign could look like, whether it's, you know, ultimately going to be that or not. I have no problem with that. I have a problem with the cover page and the whole design and everything and the font, like just parroting the client, because mm-hmm. I just think it's
aren't they coming to you to be not them? I mean, they're usually coming to you for a reason,
for something
right?
New, right?
Move beyond.
And that's the excuse I hear. It's like, well, we need to show we understand them. It's like, yeah, but they're better. But the way to do that is to really, really understand them and talk about their business mm-hmm. and talk about where it can go. It's not a visual thing. That's my feeling. And I lost that battle most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. In that context, I totally take it. I thought you meant we have a template style layout system that we're going to apply to everybody.
Oh no, no. Especially sort of in the creative world, you need to adapt to what the individual client is. I mean, but
okay, we're on the same page. Absolutely. Okay, how about some minute things? Because you asked what other considerations. Mm-hmm. I think a big consideration is page numbers. And Sandy, I would relate this right back to financial pitch books because this is a huge one, because you usually have like 4 to 5 teams putting together the components of it. if they all have the same page numbering system, which means they all start at one because nobody knows where the other one's going to end, you know, do you include the page numbers? Because when you compile those four components together, you're going to have, you know, you're going to get up to page 20 and then it's going to start all over page one again. So page numbering is always a discussion I have, like who's going to put this together and do we want numbers? Do you need some other referencing? A lot of times we'll put in place a table of contents or an agenda with section numbers and we'll just label them section one, you know, section one, page two. So we kind of do a modified one. I think we just kind of talked about the visual styling, you know, does it represent the end client, or the event theming would be not only the, you know, so you got the end client, you got the agency, and you got the actual event they're putting on, if it's, sure, if it's a creative event. But yeah, so a couple of little details to talk about and make considerations in addition to aspect ratio and do we have to stick with corporate fonts and colors and where do you want to go with this and all those discussions.
Exactly. Well, so moving from design, let's talk about the content, the flow of a typical pitch deck. What have you guys run into? What impact have you had on, have you had, if any, impact on the story or the flow?
Well, we usually spend the first 20 slides talking about the history of the client, not the client, the agency, the right, background, how wonderful we are, everything we've done, all the stuff the client could care less about, right? So that was always my biggest fight. It's like, nobody cares. You're already in the room. Move
on. But Nolan,
yeah,
how many times did you run into this? The client gave you a table of contents that everyone was supposed to follow.
Oh, and the first one was tell us about yourselves, yes, even though we've been working with you for 20 years and
exactly
know everything about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you put it in and you spend 5 seconds on it and you
right
move on.
Right.
Well, so what we've done, and I actually mentioned it, is we kind of make it a one-pager, if you will, one slide or a one-pager, just the high-level stuff, some of it pertaining to that project. But then in that traditional competition section, that's where I've kind of pushed for the, hey, let's really toot our horn. Let's say the competition, what we provide over the competition is generally the language I use. And then it's really delve into what you offer, what your history is, what your team is. Put it all, because that's always at the very, towards the very end of the whole presentation. So I've kind of taken the table of the traditional table of contents and successfully in a couple of cases
right
made it where it's very simple up front. And then we really delve into it and we kind of put a different spin on that whole competition section by just saying, here's what we'll do above the competition, not here's who our competition is.
Have you guys heard of challenger sales?
No.
It's a technique out there where it's alternative to solution selling. So the whole idea is to educate the consumer rather than to sell to them.
Okay.
And during that education, all of a sudden they realize they're doing things wrong and they get nervous.
They make a decision that
yep
you're the best solution.
Yeah, you come back, then okay you still come back. And I'll actually add a link to the notes. I've written a white paper, not a white paper, excuse me, a blog for Challenger Sales on how that process, that flow can be incorporated into your presentations.
Isn't that kind of going back to door-to-door, like vacuum salesman? Like, educate. I don't say that flippantly. Hasn't that always been kind of a way of selling?
No, well, you think, mm-hmm, but I guess the numbers are big companies that you've got by time somebody comes to you and asks you to pitch their business, 57% are coming to you because they want you to educate them on price. They've mm-hmm already made, they've done their homework. They know you do this. You have these clients, you know, as an agency. And so now they want you to come and they want to figure out if you're better based on price. So the whole challenger sales thing kind of runs around that price focus. And
explaining why you cost so much and... No, I'm seriously.
No,
like,
no.
Oh, yeah, hold on. Sales pitch and pitch deck, two different things.
Oh, good point.
Oh, right.
Right. Thank you. You're right. Absolutely.
Okay, I'll just take over and say I do spend a lot of time going over the pitch message because I think a lot of people, just like what we just talked about, they get a little sidetracked on what they're actually trying
yeah
to convey. They
yeah
lose, you know, because sales speak is so commonplace in the corporate environment. A pitch is a very special, specific, one-shot opportunity to make a messaging impact. So we do that and compartmentalize it down into a typical storyline, so, or kind of topics. So we may take each of the topics, like the 10 you just listed, Nolan, at the beginning. I think those are like awesome topicals. And but you need to each one of those have a little storyline within it. You know, the budgeting on this is X amount, and here's why we can accomplish this much within it, and here's what your value is going to be out of it. You know, you need some sort of sales and storyline to go within each one. Mm-hmm. And then so you're going to go through understanding the client, you're going to go through the whole sales pitch, and then you're going to go through a wrap up and a call to action. So the messaging is really, really critical, because most people just kind of get it a little muddled. And I'm like, you know, you have no pitch here. You just have a lot of information,
mm-hmm.
a report. So, so I think the flow of a pitch deck is really, really critical, because you usually have one shot at it.
Responding to actually what the client is asking for is huge. And I just saw so many pitches go off the rails because they forgot that. And, mm-hmm. you know, what happens sometimes is the EVP would come in at the day before and look at it and say, you know, read the RFP and say, you're not answering the question, or you're not addressing the whatever. And then it was 24 hours of mayhem as they rewrote everything.
Okay, I'm going to go the opposite direction. I've seen it too many times where they try and answer the RFP questions to the T without actually making a story out of it.
Right.
Like, you've just given a bunch of data that is not compelling, but you have answered a great answer, but it doesn't lead to a pitch and a affiliation or affinity for you. That whole answer the RFP can go both directions. Both of them bad.
I still think the pitch can use the challenger sales technique. Just have to put that in there.
I will read it. I would love to implement it into my conversations.
And you know the companies I love, the ones that don't pitch, the ones that simply say, you know who we are, and if you'd like to hire us, you can hire us. I mean, I personally don't think I've ever pitched or significantly for a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not. It's a huge time commitment.
It sure is.
And financial. Commitment. So just from that point of view, I can totally see it's like, no, we're not going to put all that money into it. If you like us, hire us. If not.
You know, at a personal level, from like our agencies, our studios, our design work, I don't pitch my work. I will provide hard costs, timeline, and capabilities, like they're within our capabilities, but I don't put myself against others. Because
same here.
Yeah, you're not doing spec work either, right?
No.
That's not even that's never been an option. Did it once and I got told never do it again by somebody. And I said, that's a good idea. because my print design showed up somewhere, even though it was because they didn't select it. But they chose it for the next project because it was available long time ago. Anyways, yeah. So I don't personally pitch TLC services. We make it very well known what we accomplish and what we do. But if somebody says, hey, we've got three design agencies we're considering, I'll say that's great, because there are tons of people out there that can actually help you. Here's what we provide, and here's the budget for it, and here's the timeline. Let me know if you want to work with us, because I'm happy to work with it, but I'm just not going to do a whole sales pitch. It doesn't make sense to work. It's not that competitive of an industry for us, but you know, a client that's pitching a $3 million show, that's competitive and worthy of a pitch and effort.
And especially if I'm up against you guys, I'll say, good hands.
Have you been in situations where you're not pitching, but you realize at the end, I would kind of going along that road. I had a client that I didn't get, and you know, came in way too much, but I was doing all that budgeting and examples, and I even actually did a couple of sample things just to say this is the direction we could go in. And then, but I didn't, I just never thought to ask. I didn't realize they were talking to other people until I found out they were talking about to three or four of my friends and our friends. None of us got it. And I think we're all happy that we didn't. Just talking about sort of openings to pitches. I saw a really interesting opening to an agency pitch a couple months ago. It was an agency pitch to a watch company that started out with a hidden camera video that the agency had done showing the misconceptions of the brand in stores. So right off the bat, they went into stores with, you know, fake shoppers with hidden cameras and asked the salesman who sold multiple watch brands about this particular brand. And they just got all this misinformation and the salesmen were steering them incorrectly elsewhere. And it was I thought it was really effective.
That's cool.
Okay, that's so called disruption.
So I know we've got more topics, but I'll throw one out here because I wasn't involved in the pitch. I'm working with the company, and I'm just going to leave it very, very vague. It's a great, great company. But my understanding is the meeting that I was brought in for, and now we're moving on to other meetings, is that it was literally we do a flat rate and we cover everything, and that's why everybody likes us. That was the entire pitch. We're not going to pitch you. Here's how much it'll cost to do this meeting. But they just don't, kind of like the same conversation, they don't want to pitch, you know, even though they're going for the big budget. And they were kind of approached on it. They weren't even looking for the work. It came to them more or less. And I had a great conversation, necessarily weren't looking for this work. It came to us and we just said, we've done the numbers. Here's what it'll cost. We're not going to line item anything. I mean, this might be very oversimplified. We're not going to line item anything. We can take care of everything and everything will meet our standards, our quality. You know, you'll be well taken care of. Let us know if you want to talk to us. And they did.
Yep.
So that was probably
the dangerous.
Well, they weren't really looking to lose anything because they weren't looking to, if they gained it, it was great. I just thought it was great. I was like, wow, I wish I could be that bold, but I'm bold enough to say I don't compete against everybody else. I'll just give you some facts.
Well, I loved Saul Bass that did the Next logo for Steve Jobs. And the story there is that he was one of the, preeminent identity designers at the time. Steve Jobs wanted the best. He went to him. He said, I want a logo for my new computer company. And Saul Bass said, okay, it's going to be $100,000. I'm going to give you one option. If you use it, great. If not, no problem.
Yeah.
And that was because he's like, I don't need the job. And he did. He gave him one option and that's what they used.
But okay, you guys, I work with my client. I mean, when somebody comes to me, but I don't negotiate. I give them a price. I give them a rate. Yeah. I give them hours. I don't, and this is what it's going to be. End of story. I'm not making it up. We're all too busy to.
But again, that's not a pitch. You're not going to the client saying, I want to do your work. The client's coming to you and you're just kind of saying, this is what I provide. I'm not really, I'm not really at a negotiation point because project load, industry confidence in my capabilities. It's all there. So this is the option available. We'll do options. Maybe that's a good word to say. We'll say, okay, we can meet that budget, but here's what's going to be accomplished within it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We should do a whole show on negotiating and that kind of stuff.
I think we should just all take the Saul approach. Okay. It'll be, $2,000 an hour and it's going to take 10 hours and go.
Take it away.
Go.
Okay. Who has a good topic? We're off topic completely.
Yeah, I know.
Well, okay, so this comes up on every pitch deck project for me. What do you do when another PDF file is supplied and to be included in the pitch deck?
We created these things called virtual flash drives because we had lots of documents like you're talking about, PDFs. It used to be on pitches that you'd give the client a CD or a flash drive filled with all the supplementary material and research and blah, blah, and pitch deck. But nobody ever looked at them, and they were waste and old school. So we started creating these things called virtual flash drives. They were essentially one-page websites with a custom URL, all password protected. And we'd give the client, instead of a flash drive, a little designed card or tchotchke or something with the URL and the password. And then that's how they would access all the budgets and supplementary material. And if they wanted to send the deck to somebody, they could. But then we could see through Google Analytics if they actually went to the site or, who around the world went to the site. And so we did those a lot. They were really popular. They did get us into a trouble occasionally because we would do these vanity URLs for them. Mm. Like, let's say we're pitching Pepsi. Be like, everyone's talking about Pepsi.com, like if that was the program we were pitching. And there's some companies that just have bots out there. Anytime their brand is used in a new website, the lawyers will automatically send out a cease and desist because they think it's infringing somehow, even if it might not be. So we got, we're pitching companies and often we'd get calls from the lawyers saying, did you just register a logo or a URL? We'd say, yeah. And they said, can you take it down? I'm like, yeah, sorry.
I haven't run into that. We used to do a bunch of the little custom, business card size CDs and custom cut CDs. That would be back in the day. That's where I came from, flash and director design. So specific to the PDF, so it's a two-part question. Is the content needed in the deck, in the slide deck, or is it just something that needs to be referenced as, like Nolan was saying, this is a separate document that has additional information? Because if you're designing a 16x9 presentation, a standard letter size document, PDF is not going to visually fit on there. So there's a couple of considerations there. One, if we determine, and most of the PDFs, well, there's kind of a couple of ways PDFs go. I guess sometimes it's like, hey, here's all the financial data. Great, we'll rebuild it, or, you know, is there any way we can get that in a format that can be used in presentation so it's editable? Or the other one, more common, I think, is here's the full budget document. We want you to refer to this after the presentation. So I like using Snagit and just doing a cool little cool little screen capture, drop it into PowerPoint, give it a little styling, a little outline, a little drop shadow, a little call out that says supplemental document, blah, 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 included in packet. So there, we've used the PDF.
Yep.
We've referenced PDF. And so I guess there's a couple of ways to look at the PDF, but PDFs are a major workflow and they definitely come up in these a lot, because you got so many different people approaching the content for the pitch deck and just throwing stuff your way.
So what about timelines? Let's compare a CEO speaker support presentation to a pitch deck project.
Well, the pitch decks are within a few weeks, because generally that's they get the RFP like 2 to 3 weeks before, and then they spend 2.5 weeks writing it, and then the last couple of days they call the designer asking for help. So that's why I don't usually do them.
Yeah.
These days.
Well,
They're a rush project.
They are. And so I usually have more that's why I asked about the CEO, because I have way more time in those CEO speaker support presentations, not the smart ones anyway. But I have to say I don't in general get those tight timelines that Nolan's mentioning.
Yeah, because you've been turning them down, maybe.
Yeah, I probably turned them down.
Mm-hmm. And we
have lots of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
good for you.
Lots of tight timelines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I try and get involved early. A lot of the agents, the agency is the wrong word. A lot of the entities we work with, we'll get involved with even just the conversation to know what's coming up. Hey, we got a pitch coming up. We're going to be putting together data. Just so you're, if nothing else, we get a heads up on awareness. But it's almost always a quick turn.
Mm-hmm. I used to get so incensed that the pitches would be due on Mondays, and this wasn't the agency's fault. This was the whoever was asking for it. They always seem to want a proposal due on a Monday, and so what that means for the agency and the designers is they're working through the weekend because nobody can get their stuff together to actually finish it the Friday before. So I bought a URL and I had it for years. I think I gave it up this year. It was called Fridays, Not Mondays.
Oh,
and at
funny.
One point I had this, I was going to create a movement to get people to sign on to only have RFPs due on Mondays and not Fridays.
Oh, Nolan, that's hilarious.
Never went anywhere. But every time my wife says, she works in advertising and marketing. She's like, we have to put out an RFP for such and such. I say, okay, when is it due? She's like, 3 weeks. I'm like, okay. And I said, when is it due? Is it due on a Friday or a Monday? She goes, Monday. I'll yell at her. Or often she'll say Friday. I think she may have
figured it out.
Yeah. I'm like, don't you know what you're doing to that agency?
What about you, Sandy? What about project timelines in the pitch deck world for you?
Well, like I said, I oftentimes will decline, or I will find another designer to work with.
You'll pawn it off on somebody.
Mm-hmm. You could say that.
I think the timelines are rapid, but there's more conference calls because you get into a lot of discussions and just listening to people sort out the content and the messaging. Mm-hmm. There's more departments and people to interact with depending on what it is that's being pitched. Sometimes it's the finance people, sometimes it's the product people, sometimes it's the creative people. What can we actually realistically talk about in this? So I just think that even though it's a tighter timeline, there is a lot more to message into them, causing more stress.
Okay, you're right. You're right. There's so many cooks in the kitchen.
Oh yeah, and content. Content and design are two parallel paths, which we always.
So that's another way to look at it. It's not It's not that it's due on Monday. It's the fact that you may have a month, but you've got 17 people you have to work with along the way.
I don't know. I never said I had a month. Even with advance notice.
You're funny.
Okay, let's go last topic because we're for timing. Let's go last topic for today, and I'm giving us a chance to kind of loop back to something I mentioned at the very beginning. What about investor decks for startups or sales decks? Because we've kind of referenced both of them. Do they, well, they represent a huge use case, and I think they're very closely related to pitch decks. Just any last or good thoughts or conversation around those?
Yeah, I mean, these are the decks that have the potential to bring in money, like, I mean, millions, sometimes millions of dollars, or, I mean, this is how you're actually earning income or earning funding or, you know, investment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one of those, these are situations where I think an effective presentation can mean the difference between getting millions and your business taking off or getting shelved. And I love looking at investor decks. Business Insider, .com seems to get a hold of investor decks every once in a while, and attach.io, I don't know how you're supposed to say it, they're another startup site, I think. They just showcased 15 sort of historical startup decks, including
those.
You saw it? Yes. I think I did a blog post about it. Including Airbnb and YouTube, and you know, and I've seen the one for Facebook, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Some are good, some are horrendous. I mean, the frustrating part is, you know, the Facebook one is horrendous, and you know, of course, that's a failed company. So,
you know, I don't like doing them. It's just so far the startups that have approached me don't have the investors yet, or they don't have the money.
Have they ever offered you points or?
No, you know, and there might have been times where I was willing to suggest it, but it just I never took that step.
Yeah. So you just said, sorry, Mr. Zuckerberg, I can't help you.
I did them, but I was crabby the whole time because.
And honest. That's great.
And I'm kind of a nice person. I may not have just sounded like it, but I don't want to turn. I feel sorry for somebody. And that's.
Do you find you end up doing a lot more content and coaching than you do just design?
In helping them, and it's knowing that they're on a budget and I want to manage my time and, you know, and be effective for them, and it just gets to be really frustrating, and
it's hard to quantify those things. Spent 2 hours going over the, like, your presence and how you want to convey your message, nothing to do with the actual design, but now you don't, you know, can I bill you for those 2 hours? Because that's kind of a intangible, but I think you greatly benefited from the fact that I've looked at, you know, like 90 plus venture capital pitches and, you know, done this and that and the other. And I tend to shy away only from the fact that I know that they're going to become more of a time suck than a productive thing. Now, that being said, we have some great long-term clients out of them, so I can't.
Right.
It's a hard balance.
And I do too.
It's a gamble.
It's just.
I mean, you can definitely make the argument that they need to invest because they have the opportunity to raise millions, but that still doesn't mean they're actually going to pony up the cash or find it. Mm-hmm. So they need an investor deck for their investor deck to raise the capital to pay you, Sandy.
What's the website where you get to, you know, you get to pitch
Kickstarter
or Kickstarter? Yeah, I need a Kickstarter to get their venture capital deck put together.
Help us hire Sandy.
That would be awesome.
I did one for my godson. It's actually my favorite. It was they did a pitch deck for Kickstarter, and I really had fun doing that one. That was a great one. I'll have to show you that sometime.
So they were selling something on Kickstarter.
Yeah, they were trying to get investors on Kickstarter. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I don't think I've ever done anything for Kickstarter where that was the end placement for it. Not saying I'm opposed to it, but I'm also probably not pushing for it either.
And it wasn't typical.
That's probably the best thing going then. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought you in, which isn't typical either. Yeah. You know, the ones I've looked at definitely could use some help. You know, you're definitely at that point looking to, okay, are these guys, well, never mind.
Yeah.
You reminded me a few years ago, I did I judged a competition out at Berkeley. This was hosted or sponsored by Prezi. they wanted to get the business school kids using Prezi. So they sponsored this pitch competition where teams would get together, use Prezi to pitch a business. And I was one of the judges, and there were some terrible ideas, but there were also some great ideas.
That's cool.
And I don't know if any of them actually, I mean, they were like ready to go to market.
Wow.
Some of these guys. I mean, most like website type service type stuff, but it was pretty cool.
Fun.
So pitch decks, they're more of a one-time meeting. You got one shot at it, so you got to kind of keep your messaging and your content, and it's also broken into multiple, you know, phases: print phase, presentation phase, leave behind phase. Sales decks, they're just used over and over and over. They're made to be malleable, a little bit of customization to whoever they're talking to, and they could be used by many people in a company. Where a pitch deck, it's going to be like one, maybe two people are going to manage that. Investor decks, they might be used a few times if they didn't get their backing, or maybe they're going for additional rounds.
Right.
But you know, they also have that additional parameter of usually having a major time limit to their presentation portion for a venture capital one. So, you know, you need to be very condensed and structured in your message and what's visually shown. So there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of projects out there. I think a lot of people come in asking for one thing, but they're really looking for another. Maybe some of it's like you said, Sandy, up front, the financials, they call their thing a sales deck, but it's really, or they call it a pitch deck, but it's really kind of a sales deck because it's not going to be used to multiple clients, but same. So it's a fascinating topic, and there's a lot of design stuff that's happening in that space. I think we're all fairly busy in there, and I don't know. I think it's just a great conversation. So thanks.
Well, thanks for defining it. I think we should have done that up front.
I hadn't really thought about it until about halfway through. I was making notes. So
that's a good one.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to our 2 cents worth on the wonderful, always in the last minute, panic world of pitch decks. And if you're listening to this right now, that means you're getting something out of the presentation podcast. So, which means we would like us to continue talking about all the things presentation and letting others know about the podcast. So please just take 1 minute, open iTunes, give us a rating on the podcast. It's one of the few metrics we have to know we're doing something worth our time and focus, and it helps others discover us as well. I feel like I'm on a telethon here, but no tote bags, but please, you'll get more podcasts. Just help give us a rating, and we'll, that will help us out. We'll keep doing it.
Okay, so you know what? I go to every conference. They always have the tchotchke giveaways left over at the end. I think I'm just going to grab a bunch of them and start like offering them up.
Just random.
I could have had a bunch of Dreamforce like bags. Like, hey, you know, I could have had, you know, I just thought. Okay, presentation pro tips. All things about presentation software, tips, tricks, and ways to make it fun and exciting and hopefully easier for you. So each of us has a tip, and mine is going to be something that I do use in pitch deck specifically, I mean, among other things, but that is the PowerPoint sections. PowerPoint sections, completely underutilized.
Love sections.
They are great for organizing content, especially on pitch decks where the section title quickly becomes the outline of the whole pitch itself. So you can literally see upfront financials, you know, offering. You kind of get this really glimpse of it. In addition, you can hand out sections. Like, okay, I know Bob's team has this section, so we're not going to work on it until we get it back. I think sections are a great, great tool that are just not, one, they're still refining how they work in PowerPoint. It's getting better. And two, they're just really not adopted by a lot of people. And I think they're a great tip feature to use.
That's a good one, Troy. I agree with you.
I love sections. Sorry.
I'm going to give a tip on tables, which, you know, those of us who work in PowerPoint aren't really happy with the table features. Did you know, and I know you too, this is to the audience at large, that you can set a default table in your template, for example. So in table styles, if you choose a table from the table styles in the ribbon, and you then right-click on that table style in the ribbon, you get the option to set as default. So each time you insert a table thereon, you will get the exact same table. Now, you can't do that if you customize a table. It won't work. It only works mm-hmm. for PowerPoint's existing table styles.
And,
cool. And?
So well, I'm trying to remember if this is accurate or not, but if you send it off as a PPTX, that holds. But I think if you save it as a POTX, it wipes that out.
Right.
Or is that with the thing with the bar charts where you try and use the
no.
totally non-functional chart thing?
No, one that's with tables. That's with tables.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so you can't do a POTX distribution, but yeah, they're yeah.
Well,
there could be a lot of cool improvement done along. Just take that idea and mm-hmm. run with it, Microsoft.
Speaking of POTX, that's my tip. So the .POTX file is one of the formats you can save as a PowerPoint file as. And essentially, it's kind of like stationary. So if you've got your template or your deck and you want to distribute it to people, you can distribute it as a POTX, which means when they double click it, it'll launch and say like presentation one. So they can't overwrite it. It automatically launches a new version of it that they have to then save over. So it can be helpful there. There are some other uses for POTX. I'm just going to throw out one other one. When you're creating a template, there are these, even though you customize it there, if you don't do anything from, you know, open a blank file, you're going to have these variants, these, and Sandy, correct me if I'm not using the right terminology, but you see all the Microsoft themes, and then to the yep. right of them, you see these four colored themes. Usually it's like too light and too dark.
Right.
Those things you want to get rid of when you make a template. They're problematic and they're just not going to work for you, and you can't further customize those. So the way to get rid of them is you open up your file and as soon as possible, but at any point, you save it as a POTX and reopen it and resave it. By saving as a POTX, it strips those four variants mm-hmm. out. So one of the reasons you don't want them there is you don't want to create this huge, great new file and have somebody accidentally click on one of those.
And change the colors.
Change everything.
Sort of thing,
yeah.
Right.
So that's, again, another use of a POTX.
Well, let's move on to tech tips.
Awesome. What's yours?
Actually, I'm going to ask Troy and Nolan to talk about their tech tips today.
Okay. Nolan, you want to go first? You want me to go
sure.
first?
No, I'll go first. 1Password. This, I believe, is available on PCs, but I use it on the Mac. It is a password management tool. I think there's another big competitor, LastPass maybe. But I love 1Password. It has all my passwords for my bank accounts, for my everything, all websites. And the way it works is you get into it, and you can get into it from websites. There's like a little widget for it, that you have a master password. So you only have to remember 1 password to get into this program, and it's all vaulted and encrypted and all that kind of stuff. Once you get into 1Password, then you have access to all these other passwords. So you go to a website and it says, hey, put your password in. All you need to do is go into 1Password, activate it, and then it auto-fills. And it'll auto-fill credit card information and address and identity and all sorts of stuff. So it's a big trove of wealth.
Where do you store your passwords? In the cloud?
Yeah, it's all, okay. It's, I mean, I think I do it through Dropbox. I have an encrypted file in Dropbox that all my computers access. But again, it cannot be accessed unless you have that master password.
I wish I had done that because I can't remember. Somehow I lost. It's a different software program. It's not 1Password. But I was using, I think it would wirelessly transmit from one mm-hmm. device to the next. And I ended up losing all my passwords. I have lost them all.
Backups to the password program are needed.
Yes, yes.
I'll talk about mine another time because I got my techie tip I wrote down. And as usual, it's a hardware thing because I'm really into it. But I got this new laptop, and I won't talk about that one yet because I'm still in the evaluation phase. But I'm really excited about it so far. But what I did, it uses a USB-C connector. So it's the first computer I've had with the USB-C connector. Mm. And I should probably talk about where I started is that the whole design studio, anybody that travels, we had a Lenovo W500 series laptop, and Lenovo makes a really nice dock. It's not super large, but it's a docking station. It's solid and everything can plug into it, and it has the power right on it. So you never have to open up the laptop to start it all up. And all of us, everybody, every work area has, you know, dual 24, 26 inch monitors, external keyboard, mouse, webcam, you know, everything is there. So it's just like sitting down at a desktop. So I really like that scenario. So now I've got this new laptop that doesn't come with a docking station. So I've been really kind of trying to come up with what do I want to do. And it's also a very small travel size laptop. I'm trying to move away from the, you know, 23 pound beasts that do everything. So I got these new ones. I'm really excited about it, but it has USB-C. So I started researching them. I don't have a Dell computer, but I did go with the Dell USB-C dock. It's called the WD-15. Ordered it based on, you know, there's a lot of reviews, goods and bads, and I decided it was the one to go with because it just seemed to have the most features. So here's the cool thing about it. Let me explain this. First of all, it's only $100, which is amazing. It has its own power supply. It has a power supply bigger than most laptops. It has 180 watt power supply. The dock itself is really small, and I'm going to put a link to it, but it has on the front of it two USB-C, USB 3 ports, and on the back it has three monitor ports. It has a VGA, a Thunderbolt or mini DVI, and it has an HDMI. You can use all three of them and have three monitors across. And it's actually taking, it's using the GPU of your computer and passing it through. It's not using a software video driver, basically. So you want to have a real graphics card, which I'm pretty excited this one does. So it also has a couple more USB ports on the back, an audio port, your Ethernet port. Wow. I mean, everything is connected to it, and it's minuscule compared to the Lenovo dock, which is really cool. I'm using, right now I'm looking at two 24-inch, let's see, I'm at my home office, two 26-inch 1920 by 1080 monitors. You know, all the other peripherals are external. I have no video lag. I can do anything. Wow. It's phenomenal. So I'm pretty excited about it. I haven't quite gotten a few of the, I've only been using it while I've been traveling too much. So I've had it for a couple of weeks, but I've only sat down and plugged it into this laptop like five times now. But the cost and the size, very cool, highly recommended piece of equipment so far.
Very neat.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design from real presentation designers, check us out at tlccreative.com and my blog, www.thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads. And
we're freeloaders.
Yeah, you're not a freeloader. And if you're interested in on-site presentation or data viz training, give me a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for my name, Sandy Johnson PowerPoint, in your web browser, and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.